Welcome to our program, Get Smart About Plan S. Plan S was announced just weeks ago, and now everyone in scholarly publishing is talking about it. They'll be talking about it next week at Frankfurt Book Fair, talking about it at conferences, the recently held ALPSP conference in the UK, and really anywhere where scholarly publishing insiders want to know what's happening and where the future is for their business. Plan S is an initiative of 11 European national research funding organizations that puts pressure on open access publishing models. And in the next 30 minutes, and that's right, 30 minutes, we're going to do this as quickly as we can, OA expert Rob Johnson of the UK's Research Consulting will give us all the details and the insights that we need about to know about Plan S before your next OA meeting start. The S, they say, in Plan S can stand for science and speed and solution and shock, but today we want you to make it think it stands for smart. Now, the program is being presented today by Copyright Clearance Center, and for those of you who aren't familiar with us, CCC is a global leader in content management, discovery, and document delivery solutions. We are a global leader, as we say, in those particular areas, and through our relationships with those who use and create content, CCC and its subsidiaries RightsDirect and Ixis drive market-based solutions that fuel research, power publishing, and respect copyright. Our agenda is a pretty obvious one. We're going to get into some of the basics as to why Plan S, why now. We'll look at who's behind all of this. We'll look at the implications for both authors and publishers, who are, of course, in a very close relationship. And we'll tell you what you should expect next. And with that, I want to introduce our special guest from Nottingham, England, Rob Johnson. Rob, welcome to the program today.
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be with you.
Well, we're very happy you can join us. Rob Johnson is founder and director of Research Consulting, an independent consultancy that specializes in research management and open access publishing. Research Consulting acts as trusted advisors to universities, funding agencies, publishers, and nonprofits in the UK, Europe, and worldwide. And Rob comes to us today from the University of Nottingham Innovation Park, where he has his offices. And Rob, you've been a guest of Copyright Clearance Centers on such programs in the past, and it was only a week ago that you and I first talked about this, so we really appreciate the way we've put this, or you've helped us to put this together as quickly as has happened. And I believe the audience of publishers, of university representatives, of knowledge workers, and content aggregators is looking forward to hearing from you today. So we'll get right to it. And I want to give us some context, Rob, because Plan S isn't so much a revolutionary move as an evolutionary move. And I think the way to look at that is to consult the timeline that you've put together here for us that goes back not so far, in fact, to 2012.
Well, that's right. I mean, open access clearly has a much longer history than has been shown here. But I think in terms of the seeds of Plan S, if we look back over the last 5 or 6 years, 2012 was quite a significant year, particularly with the Finch report in the UK, which was essentially a consensus between the different stakeholders, so universities, funders, publishers, on how to make the transition to open access. And over subsequent years, also in 2013, we've seen some of those principles implemented. So with the UK Research Councils particularly deciding to support hybrid open access, the US taking a somewhat different approach, favoring public access through the sort of famous memo from the Office of Science and Technology Policy, the EU supporting open access through its Horizon 2020 program. But I think in the few years after that, if you look at what happened in 2015, 2016, we started to see some more radical ideas and initiatives emerge. So Max Planck issued a white paper arguing for a flip or a transition of the system from subscriptions to open access. The Gates Foundation launched what, until Plan S, was perhaps the most radical open access policy, requiring immediate OA in all cases. And in 2016, the EU set a goal of achieving immediate open access by 2020. Now, I think the reason we've ended up with Plan S is when you talk about, when you hear the policymakers talk about what's happened in the intervening years, the general sense is things haven't happened fast enough. So although there was a consensus 5 to 6 years ago, policymakers are saying we're not making the transition to OA as quickly as we want. We wrote a report ourselves in 2017, which basically said the EU was going to miss its goal of 2020 unless radical action was taken. And really, Plan S represents that radical action.
Well, that's an interesting point, Rob, because certainly a great deal has been going on in scholarly publishing in the direction of open access, and really it comes down to one's perspective and one's sense of just how fast all of this is happening. And the organizations that are pushing for Plan S are known as Coalition S, and tell us about who they are and who is joining them.
Well, that's right. I think the fact this is a coalition is really significant. So as you said at the start, it was originally a coalition of 11 funders, national research funders from European countries. So the biggest are funders from the UK, from France, from Italy, but there's a number of others, Poland, Norway, Luxembourg, and many more. And in fact, that 11 has grown to 12 just within the last week with the Academy of Finland joining the coalition. And at the moment, the European Commission is not explicitly signed up in that its major research program, Horizon 2020, is already underway and the successor has not yet started. But it seems fairly clear, I think, that the EC has supported this plan and will look to incorporate the same principles into its own funding programs going forward. So I think it is the coalition of 12 as we stand today. We can expect that to grow, both with European funding bodies, some other national funding bodies, and I think potentially some charitable funding bodies such as the Wellcome Trust, who I know are looking very closely at this.
Well, and I believe you've put the total funding that these organizations have at their fingertips is about 8 billion euros currently, but you think that number is going to grow as this coalition itself grows?
That's right. I mean, in the context of global R&D and global scientific output, these 12 funders are relatively small. So 8 billion euros sounds like a lot of money. It's not that much compared to the totality. And some analysis actually by Bianca Kramer at Utrecht University, she calculated about 70,000 articles being supported by these funders per year. Delta Think have estimated it at 3% of the global total, 70,000. Would maybe be 2%, but you know, it's a small minority at the moment of articles that are covered by this mandate, but I think it's going to grow, and it's also significant in terms of the prestige of these funding bodies. So these are more likely to be funders that support articles going into high impact journals. And we should probably just recap, you know, the key message that the coalition is giving is that after 1 January 2020, any results, any publications funded by these bodies must be in compliant open access journals or on compliant open access platforms. That's the headline principle, and that's very soon, and that's a really radical move.
Well, we're going to take that apart in the coming slides, Rob Johnson, but we will highlight for people that there are 10 principles that the coalition has outlined that with really important implications for existing publishing models and really are all about trying to move people as quickly as possible to this ideal state of open access. There are open questions in this open access world, and that is how the global response will go. You were mentioning many European countries that have joined us, joined the coalition. Germany, not just yet. U.S. and China, yet to respond. What are the implications there?
Well, I think Germany is very conspicuous by its absence at the moment because alongside the UK and France, it's the largest producer of scientific articles within Europe. And there's been some very carefully worded statements from Germany expressing support for Plan S, but essentially saying they, or at least DFG, which is the main national research funder in Germany, don't feel able to sign up to this, and the reason for that is because it is a mandate. It is placing restrictions on where authors are able to publish, and the German funders at the moment at least don't seem comfortable with taking that sort of draconian approach, and they've also said they have concerns about the costs associated with this move. So as things stand, certainly from the conversations I've had, Germany is very much supportive of open access, but it doesn't look like it or its main funders are going to sign up to Plan S in the immediate future. In terms of US, China, it's worth just putting this in context. You know, we talk about 2-3% from these funding bodies. Europe as a whole produces about 25% of global articles. The US and China are around about another 20% each. So Europe, even if the whole of Europe signed up to this, it's still only a minority of global article output. So the ability to really shift the system is quite limited. And again, this would be a big change for the US, in that most federal funders at least have supported public access up to this point. So not the open licensing and not necessarily immediate open access that Plan S is promoting. And China again is very different. You know, most of the domestic publishers in China are already open access, and its interest in publishing in English language journals is often about raising the quality of research, getting more prestige and reputation. So it's by no means clear at all that there will be wider update of these principles beyond Europe and even within Europe when it comes to Germany.
Well, we are speaking right now with Rob Johnson of Research Consulting in the UK about Plan S and what it means to you in the world of scholarly publishing. And Rob Johnson, a good place to go next is to look at the implications for authors, who are the very important partners of publishers here, and the kinds of pressure that the proposed principles will place on authors, the things that they must do if they are going to continue to be compliant with their funders' principles, as well as to continue to receive funding itself. So for authors, Rob, what changes under Plan S?
Well, I think what's on the slide sets out the key changes. So the very first principle in Plan S is that authors will retain copyright of their publication with no restrictions. And furthermore, that publications must be published under an open license. So this has kind of been foreshadowed or been coming for a while. So a lot of open access advocates have been looking at changes to retention of copyright. There's been a proposal in the UK for a scholarly communications license where institutions would retain rights over authors' outputs. So it has been coming in some form, but the CC BY license, again, has already been very contentious. A number of funders have insisted on this for some time, but particularly in humanities and social sciences does give cause for concern and often causes practical issues around rights reproduction, that sort of thing. So this is quite challenging. We don't have a lot of detail on how this is going to work. So clearly publishers will need some kind of license to be able to publish. What form will that license take? It may be it's not very different from the moment. You know, many publishers already don't require authors to assign copyright. They just need an exclusive license. So on the face of it, this looks quite significant. In practice, we need to see the detail to know exactly what it means. In terms of APCs, the plan commits to APCs being covered by funders and universities, but of course that relies on authors having a funder or a university who can afford to pay. So we'll come on to this in terms of publishers, but this again is very challenging, and it leads to some of these concerns. So when we look at the way researchers and authors have responded to this, I would say I think a lot of the research community are still not really aware of quite what this would mean. But I mean, just to spell it out, as things stand, 85% of journals globally would not meet the requirements of Plan S, in that they are not fully open access journals. So subscription journals are out and hybrid journals are out. And for researchers, many are saying, well, that's an infringement of their academic freedom, their right to publish, and their right to choose where to publish. Now, many others have taken the view, well, authors have the right to be heard. They don't necessarily have the right to choose where they publish. So this is very much live debate. But also there's the concern about a two-tier publishing system. So we end up with some authors who are funded, who can afford to publish in these open access venues and pay an article processing charge, others who don't. Now we should say Plan S doesn't require or necessarily recommend article publication charges as the business model, but in many cases that is the model that will be used to achieve compliance. So this risk of a two-tier publishing system is a very live concern.
Right, and Rob Johnson, you mentioned there that many authors are not aware of Plan S and the implications for their work, but certainly you can't say that about publishers. Indeed, the response to our program offering today has been really almost overwhelming. We see several hundred participants in the webinar today, so that means that Plan S and the Coalition S have gotten everyone's attention here. It's because it is such a disruptive development, and the challenges for publishers are many. Can you tell us more about them? And particularly, we should focus on the hybrid model, which is a phrase we throw around a great deal and want to be sure that we define for people who may not be entirely familiar.
Sure. Well, the hybrid model essentially allows individual articles to be made open access within a subscription journal, usually on payment of an article publication charge. So it's a way for publishers to not have to fundamentally change their business model for a given journal, but to allow those authors with the funding or who are subject to a mandate to pay a fee and make their article open access. Now, by ruling that out, that actually puts the kibosh on an awful lot of open access articles and a lot of the growth that we've seen in open access in recent years, which has been delivered through the hybrid model, particularly in the UK, where funding bodies have been very supportive of that up until this point. So this is where constriction of author freedom comes in, because it's ruling out a lot of the journals, but also for publishers this is really challenging, because it potentially means a significant minority of their authors may no longer be able to publish in journals. And the other thing that comes into the plan is the proposal that open access publication fees are going to be capped. So not only do authors have to publish in fully open access journals, but there will be a cap on how much those journals can charge. Now, clearly the key question to which we don't yet have an answer is what will that cap be? Now, what we do know is what the average prices are at the moment and what some of the caps are currently used. So Germany, for example, applies a cap of about €2,000 for fully open access journals. We also know that Robert Jan Smits, who's the EU Special Envoy for Open Access and has really been behind a lot of this plan along with Science Europe, he has talked about applying a cap for a period of time while the market settles and stabilizes and then potentially lifting that cap. But one of the really key developments that we need to watch for the next few months is what will that cap be? And Smits has suggested they will issue some implementation guidance by Christmas. I'd be surprised, to be honest, but that's what he said, but certainly within the next few months, and that set out what the cap is. But if the cap is set low, the ability to flip journals is even more difficult than just the fact that not all authors have funding.
Well, there does seem to be a striking lack of detail in all of this. We have at a very high level the 10 principles, but I hear you saying, Rob Johnson, there isn't a lot of detail in the implementation.
There isn't a lot of detail, but I think it is worth saying there are some hints that there will be a certain amount of flexibility. And so, I think what will happen in practice, there is reference in some of the preamble to the principles to scope for transitional arrangements, possibly that hybrid may be permitted for a transitional period. So I think to some extent there may be a tactical approach here in coming out with the principles and really getting people's attention and being very clear about what the direction of travel is. But in practice, there is going to have to be some accommodation. So for example, many countries have already signed deals that will run beyond the 1st of January 2020, and will they want to unpick all of those existing read and publish deals and transitional deals? So I think there will be scope for some transition. There's also an acknowledgement of the fact some disciplines and particularly some outputs like monographs, it may take longer to achieve this. So I think we may see a little bit of movement around the fringes, but we need to wait and see the detail to know exactly what form that will take.
Well, of course, Rob Johnson, the media doesn't wait for the details. The media reports on this, and indeed the reporting has gotten a great deal of attention, particularly in the UK, but really across Europe. And here's a sampling of some of the headlines that we have seen here at Copyright Clearance Center about demands that publicly funded research be free, the so-called Plan S diet, which sounds like publishers would be going on a revenue diet, perhaps. There's strong words there about banning publishing in paywall journals. A radical plan could spell end to journal subscriptions. Then there are the supportive reporting that, of course, is there as well from a variety of organizations, government funders and non-government funders, and they greet this as great news. So give us your sense of the reaction to the announcement of Plan S, which, as we say, only happened just earlier in September, September 4th.
Yeah, it's been very mixed, as you would expect. I think, you know, some of the words there, demand, banned, radical, that does capture the response to this overall. I think in terms of the research community, some have very much come out against it, but there's been some statements by bodies that represent young researchers in Europe who have been very supportive. And I think one of the things that's really key to understand is how closely tied up all of this is with academic incentives and awards and career structures. And so part of Plan S is talking about fundamentally revising incentives and rewards. Now, whether that can be achieved, I don't know, but many people have greeted that part of it with a lot of praise and applause because they see the incentive structures as flawed. From the publisher perspective, as you might imagine, some of the open access publishers and the platforms have been extremely positive about this. Many subscription publishers and the International STM Association have been pretty cautious in terms of the response, and I think talked about the risk that this could pose to quality, to editorial controls, and that this could be actually quite damaging if it tries to move things too quickly.
Well, indeed, things are moving quickly, but not so quickly that we can see very far into the future. I would like to ask you to look into your crystal ball, Rob Johnson, and tell us, particularly for publishers, what they should be thinking about, what strategies are open to them, and in addition, the kinds of support you expect to see for OpenS and to see that coalition kind of gain momentum.
Well, I think the point I'd make is that Plan S comes within a wider context of potential threats to the subscription model. So if we look, as I said, in Germany, they haven't signed up to Plan S, but there have been some very protracted and difficult negotiations between the Deal Consortium and some publishers. They've reached an impasse with Elsevier. It's still low level, but there are growing signs of institutions being prepared to cancel their big deals. So Plan S, on the one hand, only applies to a small number of authors and publications and is pushing them to move to open access. But there's also a push from this cancellation of subscriptions, which is low level at the moment, but could continue to rise. So what can publishers do? Well, I think the fact is at the moment, it's still very difficult to flip existing journals because the majority of authors globally do not have access to APCs, and that remains the case. And the level at which those APCs could be charged is generally not going to be sufficient to replace the revenue. But nevertheless, that is the direction publishers are being pushed. And some journals, that may be a viable option. But for others, I think it's about diversifying and accelerating the launch of full OA journals and putting in place the underpinning workflows and the systems for this. Because one of the other things that's in the plan is about a greater emphasis on compliance and sanctions. So there's going to need to be better metadata, better reporting, also better guidance and education for authors about what they can do. We haven't talked much on this call about green open access. The plan kind of downplays green open access, but there is some suggestion that perhaps by placing either the final version or the author's accepted manuscript on another platform immediately on publication and with a CC BY license, that might comply. So I think the publisher's starting to think about, well, what would that mean if you had to change your embargo policy to accommodate that for those funders? What sort of threat does that represent? Thinking about that is important. And also, I think starting to put in place those transitional deals. So trying to avoid a cliff edge scenario by showing that there is a willingness to move towards open access. Because I think that's what a lot of this plan is about. It doesn't necessarily want everyone to fit overnight, but it's saying we're not going to wait until hybrid grows and grows and grows incrementally. We need to see a clear commitment to transition. So I think recognizing that's what funders want to see and starting to put things in place will be really important.
And of course, what publishers should be thinking about really depends on what kind of a publisher they are. You've mentioned there are contrasts and experiences between science publishers, life science, with life sciences, with those publishers who are working in the humanities and social sciences. Size matters too, Rob Johnson. The implications for the smaller publishers, the society publishers, are really significant.
They are, and many societies have come out and expressed concerns about how disruptive this could be. A lot of societies generate significant revenues from publishing, and they use that to cross-subsidize other activities and essentially fulfill their charitable missions. So any disruption to publishing could actually be quite disruptive to the wider research ecosystem. So I think for societies, there will be pressure to collaborate, also actually for open access publishers. So there's discussion about how can open access publishers work together and collaborate. So I think cooperation between publishers, but also cooperation with vendors and service providers to put things in place and allow things to happen smoothly and at scale is going to be really important. But it is a challenge, clearly, for smaller publishers.
Well, Rob Johnson, I want to thank you for keeping my promise, which was to get through all of this in 30 minutes. You've done a great job with that. We've been chatting with Rob Johnson, the founder of Research Consulting in the UK, and he's been helping us get smart about Plan S. If you want to do that, and if you're attending the Frankfurt Book Fair next week, Copyright Clearance Center will present another discussion on the topic on Thursday, the 11th of October, starting at 9 o'clock in Hall 4.2, the hall where many of the STM publishers congregate on the academic and business information stage. Our special guest for that discussion will be Tim Britton, who is the Managing Director of the Open Research Group at Springer Nature, Malavika Lege, who is the Director of Publishing for Portland Press and the Biochemical Society, and David Ross, who is Executive Director of Open Access for Sage Publications. So if you are attending Frankfurt, you are more than welcome to join us for that session. Breakfast will be available right before then, so please come and bring your questions, and we look forward to meeting you all there. Copyright Clearance Center is in Hall 4.2 at E18. All the information about our programs is online at copyright.com/Frankfurt 2018. For Casey Bassett here with Copyright Clearance Center and for everyone in our offices in Danvers, Massachusetts, I want to thank you for joining us. We will have more programs about Plan S in the very near future. Please watch your email box for invitations about those. Again, thank you all for joining us. Have a great day.